The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Yeah, it's kind of loud, huh? Yeah. Fun music, but holy cow.
Yeah.
All right, so you're joining Aaron.
And Bill.
And Bob.
If it's Sunday afternoon between noon and 2, we're live. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We always have a chat window open at that time. We post the archive by about 2:30 Sunday afternoon, and then this program airs on WNJC 1360 AM in Philadelphia and New Jersey. So the topic of our discussion today is the Inspector General's report on the Veterans Administration, inappropriate use of position and misuse of relocation program and incentives. I don't know when it actually started, but the first time it hit a major VA hearing in Washington was April 22nd of this year. And we have that link posted for you. We played some of that the first hour. And so the current director of the Philadelphia Regional Office worked a deal, kind of. I mean, you can see by the emails that are in that report. It's 39 pages. Good reading, actually. Normally, I'd say don't read the report because it's boring, but this is really a pretty fun report.
I think I make a movie out of this thing.
All the people, you start noticing the names, you know, and how they all cross up. But, yeah, these guys are not allowed to have management bonuses anymore. So they've undertaken a maneuvering scheme, kind of a musical chairs, if you will, to keep the salaries that they have, but move into positions with lower responsibility that would normally pay less money.
Right.
AKA an engineered bonus.
Also, too, you know, the moving expenses, and they get to sell their house, and the government, you know, has a program to buy the house, which, you know, and I'm not saying that every time it's a bad deal, because I'm sure there's people that do relocate that.
Well, they make you move. Like, they made my dad move when we lived in Seattle. He got transferred to the home office in Hartford. I'm sure they moved us.
Yeah, they're not all crooked, but the way they're structuring these now, it just looks like it's a way for them to relocate. Keep their same rate of pay, get a big fat moving expense, and walk away fat and happy with less responsibility. And then, I don't know, maybe do it again, you know?
And if you can get the other guys to move, you read this report and you see how they all got moved one click, one leaned on the other one, and they've got the emails right in there, out of their own.
And if you're wondering what, you know, how much money we're talking about, page 31 of this report actually breaks it down. It says Table 8, relocation, AVO-related expenses for VBA reassignments. It gives you a list of the people that have been reassigned since 2013, what their relocation expenses were, their AVO expenses, their PCS expenses, and it breaks it all down. And since 2013, it looks
total
like...
Total expenses, $1.753 million.
Yeah. Now... Was all that necessary?
I also think if you look at like a part of the, if you look at the large expense, like the Diana Rubens expense, she, you know, when you look at that, some people think that she got that money. She didn't actually. A huge bulk of that money went because of the sale of her house.
Exactly.
So if you have a really expensive home, the government, it was like 20-something percent that they paid this other financing company, or this company that, you know, I guess, buys and sells the houses. But
yeah, because her house was like $770,000, and they paid $200,000+ to make, I guess it makes up the difference between what you were going to lose in the current market and,
well, they take,
and what you owe.
I read the requirements there, and they basically have to get independent appraisals of the property. They get two appraisals from independent folks, and then the company that they hire to work with the VA buys the home for that amount of money. Well, if a house is appraised at a particular price, doesn't necessarily mean that the market, I mean, you might not be able to sell it for that.
Well, they only also have to, it's a 60-day thing, too, which I think is far too short. Like, I mean, if the house doesn't sell in 60 days, then this other company buys this house, and it's kind of like, well, that's a real short time to turn your house around. And, you know, I think that they should have a longer time limit there, and they should have a person not inside the VA looking at this. Like, if the whole government is privy to this program, there should be an actual government group of people that looks at this. Approvals for all the agencies. I don't think the agency should approve its own, because it's
right.
Seeing what happens.
Yeah, this is exactly what happens. And but yeah, that's a really good point. When they say, oh, she got $300,000 in moving expenses, you know, the major part of that is buying her home so she can buy a new home in her new location. But then when you start looking at her temporary housing, meals. I mean, that's where they started crossing the line and getting paid for things that maybe they shouldn't have gotten paid for. And I think that's going to be the topic of some payback, isn't it?
Well, I mean, when I look at the meals and stuff, it's kind of like, if we didn't advertise the position in Philly, so we don't know if the position was hard to fill or not, which, as you can see by reading the report, Waller had no problems coming to Philadelphia, so it couldn't be that hard to fill Philadelphia if this guy was, you know, wanted to come here. But, and Mac apparently didn't want to leave, and I'm only, you know, saying what I've read in this report.
Right,
I don't know,
right.
Because you've never told me. But, you know, to take somebody and pay that much on their house and to move them and then pay for their meals and dry cleaning when they don't really even need to move here, to me, is, you know, a waste of money. So,
well, yeah, because the requirement says they aren't eligible for that money unless they can't fill the position or are having difficulty. I forget the exact wording of it, but if they're having difficulty filling the position and somebody has to, you know, move to fill it, then they're eligible for the whole housing program and all of that. That's not what happened here. Actually, she volunteered to move, so that I would think disqualifies her for the you know, the whole housing part right off the top, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, based on what the report says and the requirements, I would say so. And then the thing is, we also paid relocation for the people that, when McKendrick left, there's charges on there for his relocation. So, you know, they said a bill of sale for this, but I mean, I feel like, as a taxpayer, there's a lot more money than just Kim Graves and Diana.
Oh, yeah, it trickles down.
All these other ones.
Sure, it relocates a whole bunch of people. And
right.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of interesting. Poor McKendrick, when he was interviewed, he said while he was interested in the challenges at Los Angeles, he didn't want to go there. Okay, it's interesting, but I don't want to go there. Specifically, he said, quote, just being interested says it's interesting, it's unique, it's different. Well, would you go? Only if you direct reassigned me. So I guess that's, you have to go there or you don't have a job anymore? Is that what that means?
He says in the report that that's what he thought it meant.
Yeah. Only if you direct reassigned me, only if you told me I absolutely had to go, and that was in the best interest of the agency, absent being removed, or whatever the letter said, you're subject to adverse action or something, McKendrick said. It's not a volunteer in my mind. I'm not volunteering. I'm saying it's interesting, and I want to understand it. So he didn't apply to any of the announcements for the Los Angeles position, and he preferred to stay in Philadelphia. But it's like
here's the requirement. The policy states an agency may pay a relocation incentive to a current employee who must relocate to accept a position in a different geographical area if the agency determines the position is likely to be difficult to fill in the absence of an incentive. Well, it wasn't difficult to fill. She volunteered to move. So how difficult?
Well, and the other issue is the position wasn't even open. It was
right.
Filled.
Yeah, and their argument that it was difficult to fill is bogus because they never advertised and they never made it available to anybody else. And they said that in the hearing.
Yeah, it's the whole program, I think. I mean, you know, whether Diana Rubens or Kim Graves did something legal or not, the program on its face has major flaws. And I think in the report it says it's available to federal employees. So I feel like any federal employee and all the agencies can use this. You know, they have some sort of program similar to this. My question is, who audited this? Because had the IG not gotten a tip from somebody to check this out, or whoever this came about, whoever got a tip, they wouldn't have found this out. It's not like there was an audit, and you know,
yeah, they stumbled onto it.
Right. So my question is this routinely audited? Because we might be wasting money all over the country on this.
Well, yeah, and you have a great point there. This is just one agency. You know, could be happening with every, well, probably is happening with every federal agency that's figured out that, hey, we can kind of skirt the system a little bit here and make it quite lucrative to move around the country and basically get paid for it. And there's a lot of federal agencies out there. So, I mean, when you're talking $1.7 million just for the VA in a couple of years, gosh, you got to wonder.
Well, and that's the stuff you found. I mean, that's 23 reassignments, $1.8 million for 23 reassignments reviewed from 2013, 14, and 15, including salary increases, relocation expenses, and the AVO, the housing.
Well, plus, so that number, what that means is that number is going to continuously grow. That's not the ultimate
of
those 23, because every year the salary increase, you know, say that you got a $30,000 salary increase, well, in 3 years, that's
$90,000. Exactly. And those keep going. So you could have hired people for the correct amount in those different locations, but instead you bumped people down, kept them at their same salary. So you can see how this thing would just mushroom over time. I mean,
yeah, I just feel like as a taxpayer, this program needs to be looked into, and possibly, you know, I think there should be a limit on how much that you're, you know, if you're going to give 20 something percent on the price of a house, there should be a limit on, you know, what that house could be. Because if someone has like a $3 million house, that ends up being a lot of money.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. Somebody in the chat here says, you know, we get it that people are crooked, known it for years. When is something going to change? Well, it's going to change when we get a new occupant in the White House who appoints a secretary of the VA who actually, you know, cares about this kind of stuff and can fire them. They have to be fired in that system. I mean, Congress doesn't get to fire them. They get to investigate them. The IG can turn them in for criminal charges, but they don't get to fire them either. At the end of the day, the agency management is the agency management. And they've got to do the deal. But I would imagine if there's enough pressure, I mean, this is all just, you know, it's about pressure. Because these sorts of things going on, I was at a thing last night. It was an Agent Orange town hall. And one of the guys got up who works in the Veteran Service Office, and he said, you know, this is, you know, I'm sure there's some bad things going on, but for the most part, they're just overwhelmed. They need more money, and they need more employees, and it's kind of like a toll booth, and if you have a lot of cars stacked up and only one guy at the toll booth, it's going to slow everything down. And I guess things like this isn't something that is solved with more employees and more money.
I feel like I hear that all the time, and when I work there and I see what they use the money that they have for, and I mean, just internally, for instance, I've made a few suggestions about time cards, something as simple as an employee's time card, where, you know, you took off these 3 days last week and you're supposed to get paid for all of them and put in this much sick leave or annual leave, you know, however that happens in our system. They have one of those people on each team, which to me is a waste of money. If you're a team of all GS-12 people, like the team I was on is all GS-12 and GS-13s. Well, if one of us is the timekeeper, you're paying someone over $80,000 a year to do a duty that could arguably be maybe clerical or data entry. So the things that they use their money for baffles me. And when you make a suggestion and say, hey, you know, I think that maybe you should have three timekeepers that are a lower GS rate, you know, that's equal to the duty that they're doing, and they can do all the time for the whole building instead of having a timekeeper on each team who is, you know, greatly overpaid for doing data input.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it's like those kind of things, you know, every year they just continue. And at some point you see, like, there's a little bit of waste here, a little bit of waste there, and it just all adds up.
Meanwhile, the claims pile up while all this all these shenanigans are going on, because you can't possibly have an efficient system if folks are coming in and out and looking at ways to enrich themselves. Obviously, when that's the goal, the mission suffers slightly. That was a joke. just in case somebody writes me a hateful note on this chat room, you're not taking this seriously. Yeah, I'm taking it seriously. It just pisses me off. And if I actually say what I think, it's probably not a good idea. So, anyway, we should take a quick break and grab some decaf, switch off the straight black coffee here. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be back with more on the VA management musical chairs when we return.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I can see the things you're doing, anything that I'm naive. But when I get the goods on you, she'll finally believe. Well, she says it's all just drama, but every bubble's got to pop. She's gonna see just what you're doing, and then you're finally gonna have to stop.
Don't think you're gonna win this time, cause you better believe I'm gonna drop a dime on you.
I'll get ya, yeah, I'll get ya. And when I do, you're gonna be busted. I don't wanna put the hurt on you, but you better believe me when I tell you that I finally got the dirt on you. You're busted.
And we can only hope.
We couldn't resist, Kristen. It was kind of funny. Okay, so in your, you do pension management, right? Aren't you still there?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Well, I'm not currently, but are you doing 3 weeks ago, that was what I did.
Do you do, up until when?
3 weeks ago.
Wow. And so you're back in benefits?
Yeah, actually, well, I was doing pension, which was, you know, the income-based benefit. I was on the quality team, and then I accepted a detail, which is, you know, they're just borrowing me to do a task, and I'm working for Washington currently out of my house and home, which is actually a very, seeing that there's a good plan ahead, because I'm on this team of people that we take suggestions about processes that probably aren't going right or red tape reduction. This month is, you know, energy month, where if there's ways to save money, these employees can go into this idea bank called the Idea House, and they can put their suggestion in, and then we review the suggestion. So in the past, if you wanted to make a suggestion at the VA, you had to go through HR, or, you know, maybe write to the undersecretary or the secretary, or tell your bosses. But, you know, for years, I noticed that those methods, at least for me, weren't working. I would be making suggestions, and they'd be going nowhere, because the people reviewing my suggestions were the ones that were, I guess, okay with the status quo. So this new job that I have, there's people reviewing the suggestions that don't agree that everything's perfect at the VA. They're more a realist, and they, you know, say, okay, well, we can't say that everything's fine. You know, we watch the news, we read these reports. Let's fix it. And it's a positive environment. The people are very intelligent. They treat you with the utmost respect, and our mission is to fix VA. So it's really cool.
Well, I think that's lovely. And have you been, you deal with the, Office of Special Counsel, and you go to them in this process for what? Where do they fit in?
The Office of Special Counsel would be the place that you would report if there was a whistleblower retaliation or a violation of a rule, law, or procedure, a gross waste of funds. So I used to go to them all the time. I went to them with the duplicate payment. I went to them.
You're fading out on us. We need you to fade back.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry.
You were like getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
So I would always report things to the Office of Special Counsel, but the stats on them is about, I think they accept about 5% of the cases filed. And I just watched congressional testimony of Carolyn Lerner, who is the special counsel. And she said that, you know, she's very short-staffed, like with the amount of complaints that have come in. And she talked about the number that come in from the VA being a lot larger than a lot of other agencies. And that there's just so many of them that they can't give all of them attention. It's just like a manpower issue. So with them, I don't have as much luck. If it's a whistleblower case, if you file for whistleblower retaliation, which I think we touched on in a prior one of our shows, that it has to be a personnel action. So the things like when I originally reported that my car was damaged, they wouldn't accept that. They said you have to contact the police. So they don't have jurisdiction over anything criminal, or it has to be like if you say I'm a whistleblower and I'm getting retaliated against. I was being followed around by a certain manager, and they were timing my break. And when I reported that, you know, they say, well, there was no personnel action. Like, you aren't fired or suspended for more than 14 days. So the problem with the OSC is a lot of things get denied because unless you're fired from your job or demoted, and it's blatantly obvious, there's no retaliation there on the whistleblower side.
So
if it's a gross waste of funds, it has to be a lot of money or they really don't take your case.
So a lot of what should protect whistleblowers is actually written too narrowly. And my guess is the management already knows those rules.
Oh, for sure. I believe the management is experts in retaliating, because things that happened to me in that building, it's hard to prove sometimes. You have to prove that there was no other legal reason to do this. So they did it because you were a whistleblower. And then what they do to you has to be something that qualifies as a personnel action. So if they follow you all day, or they, you know, harm you or counsel you or call you in and yell at you, like, none of that stuff matters. It doesn't count.
No kidding. So they could literally just harass you, and because it's not, because they're not writing you up, it doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, everything, you know, it has to be, the way the law is written to equal retaliation, it's a pretty serious thing. So the daily harassment and nonsense that goes on is ridiculous, and no one should have to go through that. I mean, there was an email that was sent around the whole office that someone had written about me, about not getting bonuses because of my mouth. And like, you know, that's not a personnel action, so that's okay.
Really? So it's,
yeah,
so it's not against the rules in any way to send defamatory emails about other employees to other employees? That's okay?
Apparently. I mean, I'm sure there is some rule that would prohibit that, but when you go to, you know, the OSC for that or different places, they say, you know, where's the retaliation? Or a manager didn't do this. It was an employee that did this. So it's, you know, that's another issue. So it's kind of like, once you become a whistleblower, you should just assume that it's going to be an uncomfortable atmosphere in the office. And be ready for that. If, you know, nothing is fast. It takes forever when you report something and it comes to fruition. So you have to kind of be patient and be ready.
Because here it comes, huh?
Yeah.
Are you still working with a bunch of other coworkers that are speaking out?
Yeah. Actually, a lot of people in our office are speaking out, people at all levels. And it's a good thing, because we're seeing a lot of changes in our building. So
nice.
I think people realize now it's okay. And if you speak out and you tell the truth, you don't always have to get fired.
Are you still having to provide legal counsel for them? Or is the fact that there are so many of you kind of giving everybody cover?
Yeah, to be honest, we're noticing that problems are being, you know, nipped in the bud. So I normally come in and help somebody if they file an EEO complaint and it gets to the point of like a mediation and they ask me to help them. But a lot of times now I'm noticing, you know, they're writing an email and it's getting handled. And I will say, Diana Rubens, that is something that she did do in the office. If you would send her an email about a problem, she would usually try to address it. So I feel like when she came, they realized, okay, if we don't want all these things filed against us, we need to address problems before they get to a certain step and level, because these EEO complaints, if you're using taxpayer money to pay for lawyers and pay employees, if you're going to settle a case, there's really no urgency. You know, that's just my opinion. And I noticed that it didn't matter. They didn't have an interest in settling quickly, because if it was their own money, they probably would want to settle quickly so the fees don't get bigger. But there's really no urgency to settle these cases. But when a whole bunch of them came in and Jeff Miller said, let me look at these EEO complaints, why do you have so many, let me, you know, and he asked for all the records, I noticed that when they're being watched or they know that someone's looking at them, then they don't want tons of them filed. So they're making more of an effort to settle these things before they get to formal complaints.
Interesting. And what kind of...
Oh, yeah, I've actually had a lot less of that type of work, which is a good thing. I mean, there are some changes being made that are good. And Diana did do some really good things for the office. So it was very sad for me to read that report. I mean, if it's true, it's sad.
Well, yeah, because it's just kind of the tip, you know, like anything else, just the tip of the iceberg. You know, when you find out stuff like this is going on, it's usually not, that's not the bulk of it. The bulk of it's hidden somewhere. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. All the info is there. Oh, yeah, another good song. You're going to like this one, too.
If you search for tenderness, it isn't hard to find. You can have the love you need to live. But if you look for truthfulness, you might just as well be blind. It always seems to be so hard to give. Honesty is such a lonely word. Everyone is so untrue.
Like every time I get back on my feet, she come around and knock me down again. Worry, oh, worry, 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 worry. Sometimes I swear it feels like this worry is my only friend.
Oh, we couldn't resist. You know, it's fun when you search some of these keywords, you know, like a song. You know, I heard one song and I thought, hey, that's funny. So I searched the word trouble. Boy, there's lots of versions of that song.
I think there's a lot of trouble coming down the line for some of these
folks. I think there is
too.
A lot of trouble coming.
And I mean, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes right now. I mean, not knowing when the next little report's going to come out or the next summons is going to show up in your mailbox.
Well, you know, and people want to know, well, you know, why isn't something happening to them right this minute? It honestly takes time. It just takes a long time. The system is big, complicated, and there's a lot of them. There are a lot more of them than there are the people that are investigating them, which yeah. I guess is good. I mean, if everybody was investigating and very few people were doing the work, that would be screwed up too. But, you know, they're protected as employees, not in the good way like you would be in a regular corporation. In a regular corporation, like we were just at Olive Garden, for instance, last night, and the girl said, you know, hey, when you, because they have little computers on your table where you pay your bill, and she said, hey, after you pay your bill, you know, could you do the survey? Because if we don't get good surveys, we just get fired. And I'm like, so people write you bad surveys? She goes, no, if they don't write any surveys. If they don't grade us high and a lot of people don't take the survey, then we just get fired. So they have this veritable revolving door going on with their employees because people see, hey, do you want to take a survey? And you go, oh, forget that. I'm ready to go home, you know.
I would think most people don't take the survey.
No. I know.
That's scary to have your job writing on that.
Yeah. No kidding. And so she said, hey, could you please make sure and do the survey? I was like, gee, sorry. I've been here. I haven't been there.
It's part of the dinner requirement now.
I hadn't been there in years.
To protect your waitress.
And I think, oh, my gosh, in the last few months I went there twice for lunch. Which is why I said, hey, we should try them again, you know, and go there for dinner. But the other two times, we didn't do the survey. Ruh-roh. Sorry. Sorry, girl in the unemployment line. I didn't know.
Blood on your hands.
I do. I have blood on my hands. So if you go to Olive Garden, do the dang survey, because those people's lives are hanging in the balance. Not like the VA where there is no survey. That would be fun, though. Maybe we should have a survey for them. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, survey. Survey says...
Because, you know, you have a lot of things. This is indicative of a far, obviously, far larger problem. And we pick on this one agency just because we have so much information. You know, we could talk about EPA or anybody else, but we need some guys on the inside to give us the scoop. Otherwise, we're just, you know, kind of talking out our hat. But VA is no different than a lot of different agencies. And without somebody in the president's chair who really wants to make a difference and requires their cabinet level guys, the secretary of everything, if they don't require them to go roll some heads because they could if they wanted to.
I think if they wanted to know the truth, they could easily find it out, though. I mean, if I was in charge of an agency, I would do a surprise visit, and I wouldn't go. When we have people that are, you know, so-called important showing up at our office, they get toured around the same group of people every single time. They never come talk to people like the normal employees. So if you really wanted to know what was going on in these places, you could walk back and talk to the bargaining unit employees. Or they'll come up and talk to them with this entourage around them of upper management, where if you see anything that's true, you know, that's not nice about them, they're, you know, the visitor's going to leave in about an hour, and these people that just listen to what you said are going to be your bosses still. And, I mean, I learned that just from speaking the truth publicly. You know, I definitely wasn't a fan favorite of management, but I just felt like something has to get done.
Yeah, and if you speak out at the wrong time, well, I see that, you know, with whistleblower calls that I get, then, you know, if people don't think you're going to, for one, be in office very long, so you might not be able to do something about it, or you're going to turn them into their agency, because that happens too. They call an elected official's office, and that person in turn calls the agency and rats them out. I've heard that from people. And there's a lot riding on it. So if they don't think something will happen, they won't speak up if it's not, you know, if it's not productive and it isn't safe for them.
Well, if it's an environment that's hostile towards the employee, I mean, it's, let's face it, they got to have a job.
Yeah, you're putting it on the line. So, but there's always that, there are always those people who will march out first. And where were you in the flow of whistleblowers on Philadelphia, just out of curiosity? Like, were there a bunch of people that came and went, and then you guys kind of got organized, or were you the beginning of the wave?
Yeah, honestly, nobody used to stand up for themselves when I first started working there in 2007, I guess it was. And I was shocked. I would see adults that had told me, you know, that they'd been through wars and things like that, and, you know, things that I'm like, wow, you know, that's really awesome, you're my hero. And they could do these amazing things, but then when it came to standing up for themselves at work, they couldn't do it. I mean, and I would see, like, upper-level managers, you know, just get abused, and I'd watch it, and I thought it was so strange. You know, like, why isn't anyone doing anything about this? And they would tell me, oh, it's not wise, you know. There's too many of them. If you speak up, they'll get you. And I'd see things happening to me where I was like, oh, wow, they're right. But it just, you know, you have to know who to talk to. You have to align yourself with people that are stronger than they are. Because most people bring everything up internally. Well, you're never going to win that battle. So unfortunately, you had, at the time when Philadelphia was as bad as it was, you had to go externally because nobody internally was going to help you. And so there weren't really any other whistleblowers. And then that's when I met Ryan Cease, and we saw the problems with the money and the payments. And we said, well, we're going to do the right thing because we have to. You know, this is crazy. We'd see veterans sitting in boxes for years, their claims not being done because we had the wrong claim number in the system for them and we weren't able to fix it quickly. So that person just sat in the box, and it was so sad. So we realized, like, morally, it was the right thing to do. Even if we were going to jeopardize our future and our job and everything else, we had to do it. And then we met Ken, which I think on a prior show we talked about how we met.
Yep.
And then it was Ken and I, and then Ryan, and then a couple other people, you know, that decided it would be best to do the right thing. And it was hard at the beginning because no one wanted to be associated with us. Nobody wanted, I used to go to coffee with a group of people, and they no longer started, I noticed they stopped asking me to go to coffee when I asked them. They were never available.
they were just super busy all of a sudden.
All of a sudden, yeah. You had some cooties on you.
Like, you know what I mean? And then you find out people are sending emails around about you, and, you know, it's hurtful. Like, you could be the strongest, you know, you could think you're the strongest person or be a strong person, but it's not fun thinking, you know, like, wow, I'm trying to do the right thing, and all these other people, like, are, you know, not helping. So then I guess people started to realize that it was okay. I mean, I survived the whole thing. So I guess they realized, well, I guess you can speak up because she's still here and she's done quite a bit of speaking up. So other people decided. I mean, I've gotten some nice letters from people that say, thank you so much. You gave me the courage to speak up. So that's rewarding to me. And then in the end, I just want, you know, if there's going to always be problems in all these agencies.
Sure.
Because people aren't perfect, but it's just that people need to realize it's okay if something's wrong. It's okay to tell the truth. It's okay not to meet your numbers. You know, employees might make a mistake. That doesn't mean you have to fire them. Like, everyone should just work together and be honest.
Exactly. Because, yeah, firing somebody, like when they had, we talked with Ken, and they gave him all those, you know, that whole room full of complicated cases. We got a picture posted on that show of what he was met with. And so he couldn't possibly make his numbers. He was being written up all the time. So firing an employee down in the rank and file is obviously... It should be harder, actually, because they're union. Should be harder to fire them than management. But it really isn't.
No, it's much easier because of production. See, management is not on production. So if employees aren't on production, it is very hard to fire them. They have to, like, do something wrong, as in for cause. But if you have a job that's on production, it's extremely easy to fire somebody because you can get fired if you don't make your numbers. And, you know... Sometimes the employee legitimately doesn't make their numbers, and maybe they're not meant for that production job, but there's other times where I've represented people where the person was doing quite fine. Management, you know, might not have wanted them there, so they made it look like that person wasn't doing quite fine. And in those cases, that's where I think there's a big problem. Like, if an employee isn't good at this job, I don't see a problem in telling them that and saying, hey, you know, we have a lot of veterans to serve here, and maybe this isn't your thing, but, you know, you're great with people, and you're happy, and you show up at work all the time. Here's a better place for you. But that isn't how it always goes, so.
Yeah, see, it's interesting because the production does happen at the lower level, but it's really, really affected by... like anything else, by management. You can be great at your job, but if the people that own your company are, you know, pinheads, even in private industry, it can be extremely difficult to get anything done. We need to take one last quick break, and we'll come back, finish up the hour with Kristen, and you can find it all online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I've come to you because I need guidance to be true.
To take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha!
Tell you what, read enough of this stuff, deal with enough government agencies, and that's where you wind up. So, Kristen, do tell. You are in benefits working from home. How's that work? Like, what do you do?
I love working from home. I think that the government should have everybody work from home because a lot of the stuff that goes on in the office, it would be eliminated. You don't have to worry about, you know, people harassing people and following people and timing people because you would just say you need to do this task and here's your job and get it done. There's, you know, there's hardly any interruptions. The government's going to paperless, so... You know, I'm a fan. I see my family much more because I used to always be driving and commuting and being at the office.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, now that they've, you know, supposedly gone paperless, everything people send to, like, out here, they send it to Oakland. In your area, obviously, they send it to you guys. But it ultimately goes to, what, Janesville, Wisconsin? And I think there's another site, too. It's the other scan place.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact locations of them, but I think that's going to be also great because... we had a lot of problems with mail at our place and whether it was being opened or wasn't being opened and where it was going. Well, now the mail doesn't really come to the places anymore. It goes into a portal and it gets scanned into the computer so that when we process a claim, everything's in the computer. It's scanned up front instead of afterwards.
Yeah, so instead of all this duplicate stuff, you've got big giant folders all over. But, you know, the only thing that sweats me about that is, you know, like in the case out here in Oakland when they had the 13,000 informal claims that had been filed month by month and year sitting in a cabinet that Diana Rubens identified as you know, claims that needed to be processed back in 2012. She actually did us a solid back then, and then admitted it last year, actually, in a hearing, so that was kind of awesome, too. But when that happened, they could see the paper, you know, and the employees who ultimately became whistleblowers, they could track where those were. They saw the cart, you know, in different places in the building. But if it's electronic, can they... I mean, we had heard that they hide them under, like, a correspondence. Instead of classifying the paperwork as a claim, it was classified as correspondence. It kind of, you know, tucked away in electron land.
I mean, that can happen because the person who's going to look at that claim has to put, like, a tag on it, for lack of a better term, to put it under control so we know we need to work on it. So, I mean, the people who do those type of jobs, a lot of them haven't processed claims before, so sometimes they'll make a mistake because they're not exactly certain. They don't have a lot of time to put this tag on it. You know, they have to do a lot of incoming mail, and they have to, you know, whether it's electronic mail or paper mail, they have to put a tag on this to decide where and who's going to work on it. So a lot of that happens, I think. I think those are training issues sometimes when the IG does their audits, and it looks like, you know, they're doing things intentionally. Sometimes from working there, it's more of a training issue, and they're just not sure. You know, they didn't get enough. The VA is famous for teaching you something and expecting you to know how to do it right after the 30-minute lesson. And
yeah, I was gonna ask you what. I mean, do they have much of a training program for employees?
You would think it would be fairly.
I would think you'd have to have 56. Somebody kind of watching what you're doing for quite a while until you get the process down.
Compensation is very structured. They have a good training program. You get sent to Baltimore, at least if you work in Philadelphia, you're sent to Baltimore, and there is something called challenge training. And it's actually a great program. There are real trainers that's what their job is, and they teach you the compensation claims. Pension, which is what I work in, I would say that department doesn't get as much attention as the compensation. It's a lot smaller. A smaller percentage of the claims are pension versus the compensation claims. Because pension claims are income-based claims. They're not service-connected claims. So we don't have a standardized training. Our training is the quality teams teach the employees the job. They teach the training classes. And from being on a team that was supposed to be doing that, you know, there wasn't anyone approving our training material. We made up our own training material. There's training material that Washington gives you, but a lot of it's outdated. The laws change so frequently that you kind of have to update things yourself.
Was the Washington training material, was that the Star Trek uniforms and the bridge on the Enterprise? Oh, that was
IRS.
I think that was IRS. That's right. Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that our, you know, the pension department kind of is like, you know, they're like least on the totem pole where they really look into the training and things like that. And compensation, I think the training is very good. In pension, speaking from experience, I think that the training needs to be longer. So people get put on production and quality shortly after they get out of training. Well, then they're petrified because they can lose their job if they don't do enough cases or the cases aren't correct. So before they feel comfortable learning the job, I think most people would say, they're put on production and quality, which causes people to cut corners because they don't want to lose their job. So I think if they cut this production and quality and they train people accurately to do the job, they have changed the way that they interview at our place, which is great because before, I mean, I don't know how they selected people, but it was just, I don't think they were doing the best job, interviewing and picking people to come through here. So now they're tailoring it more to what the job is about, not just, hey, you know, how are you today? You know, you'd be good at this. And when I got the interview for the job, I answered a few questions and verbally and did one written question, and that was it. You know, I don't think the way that I was interviewed could accurately depict if I can understand laws and interpret them and do, you know, the job that I had to do. So I'm happy to know that has changed. So hopefully they're going to make better selections for people that come in there so that there's not as much turnaround, because there's a high level of turnaround, which is a lot of wasted money as well.
Yeah, and you could see that. You can see that in the process. And, you know, it's funny, though. I'm always looking at this from, it's like, okay, but on the other hand, production is good because we don't want people lollygagging. However, how often are people, and I know you can't give me an actual number, but how often is it just determined, you know, I'm going to pull a few of these things and I'm just going to deny this claim because in order to unravel this mess, it's going to take too long? I mean, is that an alternative to keep the numbers up?
I would say that instead of the I'm going to deny this claim part, it would be I'm just not going to do this one right now.
So it just gets boosted to the bottom of the stack.
Yeah, because if you're getting your production and your quality pulled, and you don't know when it's going to be pulled, anytime during the month, it could be pulled the first day, the last day, and any time in between, and you have five cases randomly pulled, well, you don't know what they're going to pull for you and when. So if you're doing these hard, challenging cases, and you have to put them, record them to get your credit for doing them, you know, that's, if someone's quality hasn't been pulled, sometimes that's not one that they're interested in working on. When they could do, that's why when I testified before Congress, a lot of times I said, oh, they choose to do the dead people, because to terminate someone's benefits because you found out that they died, you stop their benefits the first of the month of death. It's probably the easiest type of claim you can do at the VA. So you'll see people trying to find those kind of claims because they're afraid they're going to get nailed on production and quality. And the people that are alive that need help, they'll put that one aside.
Sure. And so, you know, lately, I wish I had it in front of me. I am remiss. I should have brought it. They just released a thing and said that they had cleared up like 84% of the backlog. It was a crazy number. And yet, I'm not hearing from people that, you know, they all got results on their claims that are years and years old.
Well, that's another thing that word backlog, the definition of the VA's definition. Okay, so when I think of the word backlog, I think of any pending claim, you know, that's behind or, you know, in our backlog. But the VA's definition of backlog are rating claims. So if you were representing a veteran or you were helping a veteran and they said, I just had a baby and I want to add my child onto my award to get extra money for a dependent. Okay, that type of claim is not considered in the backlog. So, okay, if it's a rating claim, those people will say, yes, I'm happy. The VA has cleared out the backlog, and I got my claim done. But if it's not a rating issue, which is a claim board, then usually that's not considered in the backlog. So, I mean, appeals aren't in the backlog, so there's...
Right. So the appeals, there's no deadline on appeals, so they just sit there, too. Hey, Kristen, our fun and games have come to an end. Thank you so much for all your insight. I'm so glad you get to work at home. That's awesome. And say hi to all the nice guys out where you are. And thanks a bunch for enjoying the Inspector General's report with
us. We'll definitely have you back, because this story's not over, is it?
Kudos to Linda Halliday, the Inspector General lady who kind of keeps this thing alive, and Jeff Miller, the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and the archive will be up shortly.